He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The
unbelievable.
For real.
One more touch to go. And Carnivale's gone. Baradun is the champion of the world. Baradun is the champion of the world.
Hello and welcome to Off the Brawl on Off the Ball. Andy Lee, Phil Egan and Simon Maguire all here with their take on the weekend's boxing action from Dublin, Belfast and Liverpool. I'm Ronan Mullins, still in the host chair, but for how much longer I'm not sure if this from Owen Sheehan is anything to go by.
All right, you're welcome along to Off the Brawl. It is episode one. It is not Off the Brawl, it is Off the Wall. Let's do this again.
I think we're going to leave it all at
that. Okay.
I'll take number one.
Gag reel.
Good thing we're not live.
There you go, Owen Sheehan, bringing you first episode of Off the Wall with Andy Lee.
Yeah, it's a new show. I'm like, to do Mastermind, it'd be a toss up between boxing. Or probably Game of Thrones would probably beat it because I'm more of a Game of Thrones nerd than a boxing nerd.
Tommy was saying you're breaking down the boxers the same way you break down the characters. Height and reach and all that kind of stuff.
It's going unhealthy now, my obsession with Game of Thrones, but anyway.
I've never seen it, so how many episodes is there in each of them?
You've got 6 seasons of 10 episodes and a single season of 7 episodes.
67 episodes.
And then now there's the final season, which will be airing April 14th, is 6 episodes.
Feature-length episodes.
That's right, yeah, Simon's in the
mouth. 73 episodes.
That's a lot of hours.
It's
an episode, like, for the first 6 seasons.
See, if I was watching it with my wife, it would be schedules, and you can't go ahead of someone, but I, you know, you can't be watching them on the slide.
Sucked in, yeah.
You're a real fan. You've read the books, haven't you?
Books, into the law, the history. Let's not talk about it. I feel like I'm exposing some sort of, I don't know, another side of myself. That's I'm not even sure about doing the podcast. I was like, do people need to see me talking about all this stuff? Well, my street credit would be gone, you know.
Dubrovnik,
like,
have you been to Dubrovnik?
I was in Dubrovnik for a wedding once, and yeah.
Because at the steps, I haven't seen it, so we were on these steps and everyone was taking pictures, so I asked them, what's the story with these steps? And they explained to me, usually you've no clothes on and you're walking down the steps.
And you're saying shame. Cersei's walking shame.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be an epic final season. If the ad even is happening to go away, I've watched about 10 times already and just like,
It's me, Sue, Owen and Tommy doing the podcast. You can catch it nearly every Tuesday or Monday after. We're going to record, I think, on a Monday after the show's premiere on a Sunday. So Off the Wall, get it on Off the Ball.
We should do a watch party with Kenny Cunningham in or something, just to get the two of us to watch.
Is he into it?
Probably not, but I'd like to see his take on it.
You listen to him and watch anything when you kind of
Sue has the map up out in the office there, so we're going to be subjected to this for the next few weeks, I think. So that's Off the Wall with Andy Lee, brought to you by Discover Ireland, so keep an eye out for that. We'll stick with the boxing now for the rest of the show, and start with Eric Donovan, who capped a memorable night at the National Stadium with a show-stealing fourth round stoppage. He caught up with Simon after the fight.
Eric Donovan, congratulations on the stoppage win today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's a great achievement for me. It's a proud moment for me and my family, and happy with the performance as well. Nice to get a knockout finish as well with the body shot. What can I say? It's brilliant night for me overall, and fans and live TV and everything. It's amazing.
I mean, you came out tonight and you were steely eyed from the off. I don't think I've ever seen you so focused in any of the interactions we've had in the lead up to the fight. How important was it that you got the win tonight for your career to advance now?
It was so important. Like, there was a lot at stake because I feel like I've got a lot of chances. Like, I feel like I've got a second chance, you know, but this was like the big kind of finale of my second chance. You know, is he good enough? Is he, you know, here, let's give him the platform. We give him the live TV. We give him the main event. Irish title. Non-defeated boxer in front of him who has is a bit of a puncher. You know, he's been training with two competent coaches, Kenneth Egan and Joe Clifford, for the last 12 weeks. He should be ready. You know, it's just a lot of things, like a lot of kind of expectations of myself. So I wanted to deliver. I knew going out here tonight that I didn't want to just get in and just have a dull kind of a shutout points win or something. I really wanted to shine. Feel like I did, but I also feel like there's more left in me, more left to offer.
Just in terms of the fight itself, would it be fair to say that, like, Stephen came to fight on the night and brought the best out of you?
Without a doubt, he came to fight. And, you know, even from the first round, I could see it in his eyes too. And you speak about eyes. He really had a lot of mean intent. He really tried to, because one or two punches whisked by my head. Like, you know, I have good distance and I'm a good judge of punches and distance. But there was one or two that whizzed by my head. I could feel the wind off them, you know, and was one particular punch that was just whizzed by, and he looked at me and I looked at him, and he actually made a face like this, you know, and I just acknowledged it as well. But he definitely came. I just think, like, Stephen, like, he tried to focus too much on knockout rather than just get into his own boxing rhythm. Maybe probably doesn't believe in himself as much in that part, maybe against someone of my caliber. But if he'd maybe stick a little bit more to his boxing and wait for that punch, might have served him better.
And how important was it for you to have your family around at the final bell to celebrate the win?
It's absolutely amazing. You know, my two sons are there, Jack and Troy, and I just want to show them. They know what I'm going through. They know the work that I put in, and I want to show them what it takes to be successful in life. And you can apply the same kind of attitude that I'm applying to boxing, to all walks of life, to business, to whatever it is you choose to do. And I, you know, I want to just show them that you have to, you know, anything you want in this life, you have to go and earn it. You have to work very hard for it. But it's really, really proud moment for me. I was Athy's first ever All-Ireland senior champion, amateur. It's now called Elite, and now I'm the first professional champion. So that's just something that, on a personal level, is really nice and satisfying, and I can keep that with me, I suppose, for the rest of my life.
And finally, what's next?
I'm just going to keep going, Simon. I just want to keep going. I'm enjoying boxing and loving it, and the spark is there. And, you know, I want to become the best that I can. And I think there's more in the tank. I definitely do. I think there's more left for me to achieve. And I think I can become a European champion. I can become a European champion. And and who knows after that? The only limitations we have are the ones we put on ourselves. Like, you know what I mean? If there's anything comes after that, it would be a bonus.
There you have it, featherweight champion Eric Donovan buzzing after a brilliant win at the National Stadium on Saturday night. It was a huge platform for him, and he certainly delivered, Andy.
Yeah, it was a career best performance. You know, he's only had 9 fights, but and there were signs of improvement in it from his previous fights. And in against his best opponent, produces his best performance. You can't ask for more than that. And the stoppage was beautiful, you know. He started at such a hard pace. He came out of the blocks flying. And maybe that some of that was a little bit of nerves and a little bit of, you know, the occasion getting to him. But it was punch perfect. Really, he couldn't fault the single thing he did in there. And to get the knockout just kind of put the cherry on the cake, because for a TV fight, it means to be the main event, it means a lot to get the knockout. So, yeah, everything's looking good. I don't know, what do you guys think of it?
Yeah, I mean, like we said in the post-fight show, that it was the Eric Donovan show, and Stephen was going to come at him, and he did. He came straight at him, and it was like Eric put on a clinic.
Well, Stephen's style enabled Eric to show his best.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming forward and swinging wild punches, and Eric could slip at them, move them, and encounter him. It just brought the best out of Eric, and kind of given that, you know, the style, it just gave him the great opportunity to show what he can do.
Mm. Yeah, and he dealt with the pressure, because all the pressure was on him. There was nearly 2,000 people there, huge contingent from Athy, and, you know, if all these people are turning up to see you and you don't perform, like, it'd be hugely disappointing.
I'm sure there's a huge crowd at home watching it.
Yeah.
And people who, like, because there's so, like, Eric has so many people know of him now, especially locally.
Yeah.
And more than half of them wouldn't even come to see him fight, but they'd be watching it on TV now.
Yeah, they would never have seen him.
Some of them would be hoping he'd lose, you know, the way it is. And, now, you know, like, now they have to say to him, like, well done, you know what I mean? Because, so trust me, when you're on TV and you lose, people who you wouldn't even be, you think weren't even aware of you were boxing, oh, hard luck the other day, with a little wink in their eye, you know, a little, yeah, not a little smile, and that's great for Eric, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant, and he's 33, but, you know, he's obviously had a few injury problems, and you can just see even from his interview with you, Simon, maybe it was because he was talking to you, Simon, but he's buzzing.
Like,
he's,
why did you say that?
It's an honour, like, you know?
Yeah.
And he just has that look in his eye where he's excited. He's got his,
yeah,
he's got, yeah, and he's got the passion back for it. And the injuries are behind him now, and he's looking forward to, you heard him talking there about, you know, we talked about it after the fight as well, maybe an EU European title.
What's the scene at a European level now at featherweight? Because Kiko Martinez had won it, and then has he vacated it now, or what's...
He's going to fight Oscar Valdez by the looks of it, so...
He vacated then.
It's a little bit up in the air.
Coming free, yeah.
The current WBO European featherweight title is a guy from Ukraine called Oleg Malyanovsky. He's 23-0, 7 KOs. He's very light on his feet, relentless pace. Very southpaw, and he's like almost a mini Lamachenko.
I know, but those like WBC European, they're not really a European title. They're just...
It's the EBA.
It's a version of, I don't know, it's just not a belt, so sanctioning body can get a fee. It's not a European title. The European title is a European title.
Do we really want Kiko coming back over here?
We do, though. Yeah, we would. It would be great.
Yeah.
It would be brilliant.
He's only 32. It seems like he's been around for a bit.
He's not, is he?
Yeah. So, I think he was very young when he fought Bonadon.
He's just always looked like a road warrior, a grizzled vet, and he's just been around.
Never seen hairline when he fought Bernard Dunn, surely.
That was what? The Bernard Dunn fight was 08, was it?
I think 07, wasn't it?
07.
But the only outlier on his record is really the Scott Quigg, where he thought he could just walk through Quigg and he ended up getting caught. But just back to Eric, we spoke about it beforehand that Kenny Egan was notably putting the pressure on him, and it seemed like Eric, like, box to that pressure. He was so
me and Eric are good friends, but Kenneth and Eric, they know each other inside out. They were on the team, like, they've been through the wars together inside and outside the ring, and Kenneth would have a good idea of what makes Eric tick, you know, how to get what he would respond to. And so, like, yeah, they had a perfect plan, and it was quite cute. Kenneth, like, he didn't give too much away in the build up, and he kind of laid it out in very, like, matter-of-fact terms, in terms of Eric being under the pressure. Like, Eric being has to perform, has to produce, and wasn't, like, looking for any excuses or, like, any mental edge over Stephen McVeigh. He just said, look, he has to do it, and it's on him. Credit to Kenneth Egan as well for, like, getting that out of Eric. And Joe Clifford, who's in the corner. They work hand-in-hand together.
Ken did a lot of the shouting. We happened to be sitting beside that corner, and we were getting full commentary from Ken. But a big night for him as well.
Of course, yeah. And that's,
you know, he's got a huge reputation, and this is his fighter.
It's a vindication for him, isn't it?
And that knockout punch is one of Ken's, like, that was always his favourite right up cut to the left uppercut to the body, you know, inside an opponent's punch. And
he got him at one earlier.
He'd heard him and heard him and heard him, yeah. For Eric, that was one of the most encouraging things for me to watch, that he invested in the body very early against an aggressive opponent. And before the knockout, there was two or three shots that really hurt McVeigh. But McVeigh came to give it a fight, and he gave it a good go. And at one stage, I thought he was kind of catching up a little bit with Eric. You know, the first round, Eric started off blister, and the second round again. But the third round, you could see that McVeigh was just kind of coming into it a little bit. But then in the fourth round, the body shots were just too much for him to take.
Yeah, he caught Eric with a left uppercut or overhand hook or something. And for the first time, and Eric,
you could see it.
Eric
well,
was like, all right, this guy's still here. But, like, he dealt with that, and he came back in the fourth and took him out. And, you know, it's a statement win for him now to kick on.
Yeah, on Stephen, although he turned up as game as ever, it never felt like he established his own boxing in the fight. He was sort of fighting Eric's fight from the get-go and, like, playing catch-up almost immediately. And just back to the pressure thing, Eric, it was like some people, when it's a bit lax, can kind of box a bit looser, which can be good for some people, but Eric seemed so clued in, and everything, he was throwing everything with spite and, like, mean intentions, which might necessarily, like, you meet him outside the ring, he's kind of happy-go-lucky sort of chap, but he was so switched on from the get-go that he could easily have coasted, but given the platform, he hasn't boxed on a platform like that since the seniors probably, and he wanted to rise to the occasion and he did that.
Yeah, like I spoke to Lenny Gunnan, his promoter, and he was kind of saying to me, like, I really would love Eric to get a stoppage, you know, in this fight or a knockout. And then I spoke to Eric, and when a fight is preparing for a fight, and people are, you know, you have to kind of convey your message in the right way. You can't really just say, like, because you don't want to, you're aware of the pressure they're under already, and maybe some doubts they have in their mind or whatever it may be. You don't know what anybody's thinking. So to me, my advice was to box him early, and then hopefully, like, tie him out, and he'll become frustrated after six or seven rounds. Then, if there's a chance, put on the pressure. But Eric just had different ideas. Like, he just, from the first bout, he just went about his job, and it was like he can't fault a single thing he did in that ring. So you could see that, like, he's ready to step up now, and he's done his job in terms of what he'd done in the ring that night. And now it's on Lenny Gunnan, and it's on his management, and he's on Kennedy, and to keep pressing for him now and get him the bigger fight, and an international level opponent, and one that would be a stepping stone to the European title.
There's talk of September, isn't there? It's kind of the talk, his next fight, maybe.
In terms of a headliner, probably end of the year, but they want to get him out, get him active again after that year layoff. And Leonard actually made the point that lesser characters, even not even fighters, probably wouldn't have made it back from the injuries Eric's been through, because knockback after knockback, and
look, I'm paying injuries for it all for himself. Like, you know, he had an operation on his shoulder. He had a frozen shoulder, and like different things and cuts and niggles and hands, and like, and funding all that himself. I think it was quite expensive. I can't remember the actual figure, but it was quite expensive. And like, he was saying to me, is it worth me paying for this? Because who knows what's going to happen? Because where am I going to get another fight, and will it be worth even that fight? So, like, he's come through it, he's stuck to his guns, and like, he's always going to be the Irish champion of Ireland. He'll always have that title, and hopefully more.
Mm. And the opportunities could well pan out from now, given the Kiko Martinez situation. Do you think he's ready to jump right up to that level, or would you like maybe end of the year?
He could, because he has an amateur experience. Now, he's had a long layoff, and let's not just put that out, like, just forget that, because, yeah. And he's only had four rounds now. And credit to Stephen McVeigh, but he wasn't really a contest. It was never like a really hard, it wasn't going to be, like, the occasion was big, and it was a big fight and a big platform for Eric, but it wasn't a hard contest. So maybe he does need one more fight, but
like a 10 rounder,
yeah, and a better opponent and test himself going the distance. And maybe it's not a headline where there's pressure on him to perform in that kind of level, but just where he gets 10 rounds in and then sets him up for the next, for hope. I would say one more fight and then European, if they can get it. Like, it's one thing saying you want to fight, but it's another thing securing that fight by agreeing terms and bringing him over here, or traveling himself. Ideally, you'd have it in Ireland, wouldn't you? You wouldn't want to travel for it, like.
Yeah, well, I think there's now, after with the TG Cahir on board, and the fact that the show almost sold out there at the weekend, you know, that they could make a very good case for the fight to come
on. It's
only
going to keep getting bigger and bigger. It's only going to keep growing, because people are watching at home, and it looks like a great night. And like, I brought a few mates with me, and they were like, this is a fantastic night. Like, why? Any next time it's on, let me know, because we'll be coming, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that everybody else will have the same reaction.
What was noticeable, I know, Ronan, you said it to me on the night, was the fights, there was no lull.
Like, well, it was bang, 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 wasn't it? As soon as the fight was over, they were in, like, they were announcing the next fight, and that was really, really good.
Yeah, because you don't want to be hanging around for half an hour waiting for the next fight.
Yeah, home and even, like, when there were stoppages, they were straight on to the next one, and that was quite
that
good.
That helps. Like, I mean, if you're trying to attract maybe the fan, like a sports fan that does have an interest in boxing but doesn't go to many events, you know, that's going to bring them back.
Yeah, it was good. Good night of fights. Like, from the top to the bottom of the card, there was some good competitive fights.
Mm. And none more so, actually, than the co-main event, which was the much-anticipated clash between Victor Rabe and Jake Haney. We caught up with Victor after the fight.
Victor, how are you feeling?
I feel great. A bit exhausted from taking all the photos, but apart from that, brilliant.
How would you rate your performance tonight? Jake came right at you from the opening bell.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. And he quite possibly got the better of the first round. But after that, I think you got your timing going. How do you see the performance as a whole?
I'll be my worst critic every single time I step out of the ring. I think that I could do more, but I'm happy with the win. I was very comfortable in the round, in the fight, and I thought that I had the whole fight under control. I didn't know much of Jake coming in. I just knew he'd bang and he goes forward. So I was just being very cautious. Boxing is such a cruel sport that one punch can turn it all away. So I was just being very cautious. But I thought I had the fight under control.
And just in terms of the fight progressed, you definitely got more kind of slicker, if you want to put it like that. And Jake was kind of lunging in, and at one stage you kind of lifted him up. Was that kind of off-putting, or did it knock you out of your rhythm at all? Or?
Not really. No, I was slipping his jabs, and then when I was doing that, he was kind of going over me and trying to push me down. So I wasn't going to take any, so just decided to stand up. Going into the fight, they're saying like they hope I was I'm not going to run. I don't think I ran that much. I think I was pressing him back a good while. Listen, Jake delivered on what he promised. He was out of the ring for 2 years, so fair play to him.
And just going forward, where do you see what's next for yourself?
I have to sit down with my coach. I have to look over the fight again, but I'd love an Irish title, hopefully this year, and a few away fights.
To the victor go the spoils, Simon. What did you think of his performance?
I was very impressed with it. Just stylistically, I just think he is a very appealing style to watch, very easy on the eye. I thought the first round, as I said to him there, I thought Hanny won it. I don't know if he was too pleased with me saying that, but that's how I saw it. But then I thought after that he gradually took over. Midway through the second round, he seemed to get his timing right and getting Jake's timing coming in. And I thought he dominated, got a comfortable win. He could do a throwing a bit more. I think that was what he kind of discussed afterwards. But his jab in particular was very stiff when he threw it. It snapped. If he threw it a bit more, he could progress pretty quickly if he just ups one or two little things in his arsenal.
Mm. Even during the fight, I thought it was a lot closer. I remember saying it to you. And in the seventh and eighth round, I thought he turned it around because he was the one pressing the action. And kind of he drowned Hanny a little bit. But I know yourself and Spike, Andy, on the TV coverage had it. Maybe
we had it close, yeah. I agree with, like, you know, when you look at him, he's so well balanced. He's got good head movement, he's got good punch selection, but he needs to be active. He needs to be a bit more busier because he has to be convincing. Like, it was, you can see there's huge potential there, but it's far from convincing because he was so, I don't know. Sometimes you're going to get trapped in, like, not looking pretty, but he was looking pretty. You know what I mean? He was shaping and moving and making Hanny miss. And all the while, Hanny was being effective with an awkward kind of style of boxing and landing shots that shouldn't have been landed, you know, and catching him punches and building up points. So, Hanny hadn't been out for a couple of years. There's very little footage of him online. So, the first couple of rounds, I think maybe Victor was just having a look at him or didn't know what to expect or how to figure him out. And he did fall behind on my scorecard. He was quite way behind. But he had a big finish, and it was a deserved winner. There was no complaints from Hanny after it, you know. So, but yeah, he has all of it. You can see he has all the ingredients. He has the footwork. He has the balance. He has the punch selection. He seems like he has a good IQ in the ring. Some good ring generalship of how he managed the fight in the middle rounds and. But put it all together and be more consistent, I would say, because he's a future, he could be a potential headliner going down, with some big fights. You can see, throughout the card, he was probably probably had the most quality of any boxer on the card in terms of what he was doing in the ring, and someone who you could see, going on and going through levels and fighting on a bigger platform.
Seemed to have a fair following with him as well.
But it seemed he was making Hanny miss so much that he was almost enjoying it, admiring his work, and he never actually made him pay. All he has to do is attach a good shot on the end of that.
There was one time, I think, just when he started to pull it together, after he kind of caught up to Hanny, when Hanny threw something at him, he just slipped and laid back and rocked with the right hand, and it kind of rung Hanny's bell, you would say, that was it. That was a turning point, but you would want to see that more and more and more, because...
But that's
really, with his kind of talent, he could be taking these type of guys apart. Yeah. It shouldn't be going the distance. He should be taking them apart.
But that's fixable. That's an easy thing to cite in the gym and say, you're doing everything right there.
It's a mental thing as well, though. He has to be able to push himself, you know what I mean? And push himself through the gears and work hard. Because it's very, if you start fast, you can maintain it. But if you start slow, it's very hard to go up. It's very hard to keep pushing yourself and go up and up and pick up your pace. But if you start hard in a fight, you may drop down, but you'll always be able to get back up there a little bit in spurts. But he certainly started too slow in that fight.
I think the first couple of rounds you could give to Hanny. I suppose the danger as well is if the judges are giving the rounds to his opponents, he has to convince the judges later in the fight that he deserves the rounds.
Because that's a big, it's a swing for the judges and their perspective of what they're looking at. And but with Victor's kind of, with his attributes, he could be really taking guys apart, and looking sensational. And that's for him now, that's his challenge. It's not about going the distance anymore or at this level of opponent that he's fighting. Picking it up now. And becoming a star, because you can see he's got star quality. He's a good-looking guy. He speaks well. He's very bright and bubbly, and a very pleasing style. And you'd like to see him do more now.
It certainly felt like he had gears to go the other night, and his fluid style. He was switching between stances, just good to watch. And he was running around after the fight ringside, so he had plenty of energy.
I think as well that was a big thing as well in the fight, the fitness levels. Like Hanny definitely looked tired towards the end, and it looked at one stage that Rabai was going to stop it in the seventh when he had him over in the corner. Mm. And if he does stop it, then we're talking like we're having a different conversation. I suppose the most encouraging thing is he didn't get hit that often. If he's just a bit more active in what he throws, then he has huge potential. As I said, there was plenty of people there to see him. There's plenty of people I know that were watching on TV that had never seen him fight, and they were very impressed with him. They said, he has the kind of cheeky smile, he has swagger in the ring. So I'd be excited to see what he goes on to do, and definitely there's serious potential there.
And even Hanny, the raw materials are there. He shows some good stuff in there. And the point I made to you after the fight was he was kind of leaping in with his shots a bit, wasn't closing distance with his feet. And ring rust, depends who you talk to. I know you say it's definitely a factor. It's a real thing in boxing. As I said, the raw materials are there. He can probably build from this.
He'll definitely come again. Yeah, it's a good showing after 2 years out to come back and fight one of the best young fighters in Ireland, in Rabai. There's a lot there for him, and he can take a lot of encouragement from it. Technique, he was kind of probably a little bit too eager and a bit like after being out for 2 years coming into a big fight like that and being nervous and just got over it, like was coming over the top with these punches. That's why that thing kept happening where on the commentary, Spike O'Sullivan said it's just like a scene out of Dirty Dancing. When he lifted him up for the first time, and then Sean Bonner, who was on co-commentary, just referred to Dirty Dancing. Anytime something happened like that in the fight, it must have been 10 times, and it was always going to happen because Rabai is so sleek and gets low, and Hanny would keep coming over the top. So there was a lot of Dirty Dancing, Patrick Swayze references during the commentary.
Simon, the beauty of it is, and it's the point that was made at the opening press conference, that rather than matching these off with European opponents or people we're not familiar with, it's like local derbies, and people are invested in it one way or another from the get-go, and it builds the profile of the fights even before they've started.
Yeah, and I like all the fights are competitive. Every fight I saw, anyway, I just got there just after the Dylan Moran fight, but it was a great night of fighting, and Hanny won't fall off the scene now. He'll actually be better for the fight, even though he lost. Originally, that was supposed to be a 10-rounder, but he couldn't get sanctioned because he hadn't fought in 2 years. And probably just as well, because he really started fading just after the sixth, and that's probably what swung it completely into Rabai's favour. But I think Leonard was talking about a rematch between the two. I don't think so straight away. I think that could happen down the line, but I think Hanny needs to get back in, get a win, get a good solid 8 rounds again, and then we'll see what Victor does in his next fight. But there's a scene now going into the next card, and I think they want to go down to Waterford and then possibly on in September again in Dublin. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Hanny goes, but I enjoyed the night as a whole.
And Alan Phelan and Aidan Metcalf opened the card. It seemed like size was the biggest factor in that fight. There was a turning point where Metcalf nailed him with a good shot. The gum shield came out, and it almost seemed that switch Phelan on, and from that point he just took over, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I said to you, he was feeling his way into the fight. Yeah, the first round, Metcalf was actually very good counter-punching in the first round, but then Phelan in the second round, he bloodied his nose. He just looked stronger. Just looked, physically, he just looked easier on the eye. Metcalf is kind of, you know, rangy, kind of skinny. Had, like, in fairness, he was quite brave in how long he stayed in there for. You know, he got knocked down a couple of times, but Phelan was, like, he missed weight, obviously, as well, so you don't know.
It was noticeable as well.
It did look at one stage like a man against a teenager going into his body, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It just physically, they looked not poles apart, but quite different in the makeup of the fight, and you could kind of see once Phelan got going that fight was only going to finish one way.
And it must be a demoralising thing, Andy, even when Metcalf feels like he's getting good work off, Phelan just disrespected his power and just kept walking down,
that breaks your heart, especially for a young fighter. It's very hard to kind of have that resolve where you just kind of bite down and keep going irregardless. But yeah, like both you said, it was man versus boy, and it was probably somebody who was too heavy, you know, going into that fight, because he missed the weight the day before, and who knows what he was on the time of the fight. So he had a huge advantage in terms of experience, age, but also weight, which is huge in boxing. And yeah, it was once he felt what Metcalf had, he kind of had no respect for him, walked him down, kind of old manned him, and just like, he was just winging that left hook from at the start of the round, bing, the bell goes, comes out, wings the left hook, and eventually they started landing, you know, and it was a good win for Phelan, but he has to be making the weight, you know. You can take those wins, but sometimes you have to come with an asterisk because you did miss the weight, and it kind of takes the credibility out of it a little bit, but good win for Phelan. Now he needs to get busy and push on, and Metcalf needs to really kind of rebuild and gather himself again. Fair play to him for taking the fight, but it was far too young in his career. He's only had two professional fights, and going in against an experienced man like Phelan, like, it was just way too much of an ask. Not only that, you got to know, if your fighter has two fights, but oh, he's a sensational amateur, and you know his ability, then you can put him in with somebody like that who's 9-3 or 9-2. But if you look at the style, you got to know what your fighter's capable of and how fast you can move him. And his talent, the fighter's talent dictates that. But they have to come together now and start building him again from scratch and just go back to thinking that he's 0-0, that he hasn't had a personal fight, and his next fight treat it as a debut and build again from the start, because although he would have learned a lot, it was a bad defeat to take for a young boxer, like, kind of confidence crushing. And
yeah, he looked distraught after
him. And it was punishing as well. It wasn't just
it was horrible. Like, all his family were right in his corner, you know, and they were screaming at him and screaming for him, and God, the emotion, like, you know, and just like, they going through it as much as he is, and then he gets dropped, and then, oh, you know, it's just, it's a brutal sport when it's like that. And
yeah,
and the fighter, like, Phil Sutcliffe, I have huge respect for him. I think he's one of the best coaches in Ireland. But you'd have to question him, why would they put this kid in there with only two fights? And like, there's no, like, I know maybe that's because of the TV and his pressure to get on there. You want, like, the promoter wants them to fight each other. Like you said, these local rivalries, and it builds the fight and makes it bigger than it actually is. But sometimes you got to protect the fighter and say, look, it's too soon for him. We'll get it, but maybe two or three fights down the line.
Yeah, I got a bit uncomfortable watching the closing kind of finale of that. I was kind of hoping they'd chuck in the towel a bit sooner, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the writing was on the wall, you know, what, maybe two rounds before it was stopped. You know, it was just, it was tough to watch at times, and it should have been stopped sooner. I think it's the only way I can kind of sum it up.
Yeah, I suppose, going back to what Leonard has said about, you know, if these lads lose, like, that's not the end of it. Like, you know, go off, get a couple more wins under your belt, learn from the defeat, and
you can't always just brush them off like that, especially a loss like that. Like, it takes a lot out of your confidence, your self-esteem, and especially, like, you know, it was on TV, so like we mentioned earlier, everyone would have seen it. You know, all these local friends and neighbourhood guys, they'll all be reminded of that fight, you know, and it's a tough loss to take, so it's not as easy as that. You know, I know, like, he'll want to get back in the ring as soon as possible, but he'll have to take some time now.
Yeah, he took a lot of punishment in there.
I think you can point to Tevin Farmer, you know, and just go, look, he lost 3 or 4 fights very early on in his career and look at him now. So that's the...
That's the out for everybody who gets beat now.
Yeah.
Lomachenko lost early enough.
Third fight.
Fighting a world champion, though. But like that, he's third fight against a guy who missed weight and was, like, more experienced and a lot heavier than him.
Yeah.
So maybe he can take some credit from that.
Yeah, and from the Phelan perspective, good night for the family. Monica Antonik welcomed Caitlin Phelan to the professional ranks, and it was a clear win on the scorecards, but she seemed a little bit over-eager, almost smothered her work, jumping in a bit. Yeah. And she'd probably want to come down to a lower division as well once things shake out a little bit and maybe establish herself a bit more. You know, it seemed a little bit like the occasion got to her, I thought.
Yeah, she like, I mean, it was a professional debut on national TV, so yeah. We can't be too, you know, she got very excited and kind of rushed in, but she was always winning that fight. She was a stronger, more competent boxer from the off. You'd wonder why it was so high up, you know, the card for a professional debut like that. But, you know, the future's bright. It was a good start to her career.
The reason why, and I don't want, like, I'm all for, like, equality in that, was because she was a female fighter and they wanted her on the TV.
Yeah,
and that's it. Like, but for her, it's
yeah. Well,
it's,
I mean, I think, you know, if there's people watching, like if there's young girls watching and they see women fighting on TV,
yeah, it's encouraging.
Know, so I can understand why they did it.
I know, I kind of too. But in terms of quality of boxing, it wasn't very good, was it?
Yeah, and it was four rounds, and I know. She came out like all guns blazing in the first round, and at one stage
she did look good in times. Like, yeah. She has a professional kind of a style,
yeah.
And she was landing some good shots. Was Monica Antonik a former Olympian? That was in her bio. Like, but I wonder. She's like, she was good age and one win and 19 losses. Like, you'd wonder what her motivation is to keep boxing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if they're looking to get more exposure for our female fighters, I don't see why they couldn't do an exhibition with the amateurs, you know? Mm. Maybe contribute to their expenses so they're not being paid, but they're still getting the profile.
Yeah, there's a lot when you do that, because I know from experience you have to pay the association, you have to pay the referees and judges, and it's just another expense on a card that probably is already running tight, you know, on a tight budget. But no, she'd go for that, and it was incredible that her brother and how they fought back-to-back on a professional day, like, you know, on a car.
He was sitting, like, he was still in his gear, sitting ringside.
Yeah.
Now, he had a bit of a cut, but she walked by us after the fight, and you said to me, like, she doesn't even look like she was in a fight. She could go out on a Saturday night and nobody would even know that she'd had a fight.
Yeah, just there wasn't that much clean stuff landed. There was a lot of stuff inside, and she was just getting the better of that. Like, only 18, so, like...
A long time.
Yeah, and...
What a way to make your debut, and what a, like... be until she actually fights for a title, she probably won't be under any more pressure than she was on her debut. So it's a baptism of fire in some sense.
Yeah, and I think lightweight's going to be the ultimate target for her. She'll probably just fight her way into that and try and establish herself over the next couple of years. She should fly through the ranks given the platform she has behind her now, and hopefully we can get some big fights over here. Elsewhere in the card, anything catch your eye in?
I only got in... kind of towards the end of Martin Quinn's fight, and that looked like it was a barn burner, as Martin is always in those type of fights. The reports from ringside was that he was quite fortunate, not fortunate, but he kind of got a good decision in his favour. Yeah. But maybe he was due one, because when he fought Carl Kelly the last time, I thought he'd won that.
But, I thought he won.
We're
all sitting beside each other, and...
We don't agree to each other about most things.
Yeah. Like Francis Lazar, who
sometimes
comes,
you just go against each other, just because if he's like, he might say this guy's pink, and you say yeah, it's blue. You know, like he might say, you know.
But I mean, we wouldn't have talked that much. We would have talked, say, after a round. Like,
yeah.
I might say I'd give Quinn that round. Like, just talk Quinn through more. I think.
Yeah, but
Lazar, who is a better boxer, but like again. Constantly throughout the fight, his corner were shouting at him, "Work! You have to work!" And the fact that they had to keep like reminding him, like there was no doubt he was a better boxer. But I just thought Quinn landed the more
scrapper, isn't he?
Yeah,
you have to respect a guy like mine. Yeah. Quinn turns up and fights
so
every
you didn't
time.
See Francis. Entrance,
I saw that. I saw it on social media.
Class.
Yeah,
like when I saw that, I thought, "Wow,
that's star quality right there."
Yeah, and you know, at the start, I thought, yeah, he's going to back it all up.
Mm.
And I'd say he would have walked away from there on Saturday thinking, that's one I left out there. He was more than good enough to win it.
I thought he would.
I thought he landed better shots, and it's going to be hard to ever outwork, you know, in that situation when it's the boxer against the brawler, and like it's quality versus quantity. I just thought he was landing better shots throughout the fight. It was very close. Now I don't think either one could complain.
It was the referee's decision. He was the judge.
Yeah.
So it would have been interesting to see if we had three judges, what way it would have gone.
Yeah. Well, I felt that. Any time I watched it, I felt that I missed a part of the second round, but I felt that Quinn was always on the back foot. Now, and he hasn't got that style where he's leading the fighter on. So I just thought Francie won it quite comfortably, but maybe you have to watch it again on YouTube.
And Martin has fought Francie in the amateurs as well, in the novices, I think, and they were supposed to fight a second time and fell through on the day, so there's a history there, so hopefully we can build a little rivalry.
Well, they're one apiece now, and I said to Martin after the fight, we're going for number three now, and he said, no, I don't look back, I only look forwards. So I don't know if that's a promote or a...
They should go again.
Yeah, I think
go
so.
Go again, next time it's on TG Car, go again. Because it was pretty that wasn't on TV.
Yeah, Leonard even said afterwards it was a coin flick between which fight was going to be that fight or the Queen or the Phelan Metcalf fight. Mm. So maybe they'll get bumped up the next time.
But like in terms of a showcase on TV for domestic small hall boxing, it was pretty good, wasn't it? All the fights were pretty good and competitive. Yeah. Rabbi and Henny was dramatic in a sense, and then Eric just showing the class at the end. It was really good.
Yeah, and everything from 6 o'clock was streamed, so it's all available. If anyone missed any of those fights, they're ready.
Maybe we should watch that fight back.
Yeah, maybe we should. We don't have a plane in the background.
Before the action in Dublin the night before, there was a much talked about card in Belfast as well, headlined by Luke Keeler against Conrad Cummings 2. It was a rematch, but if anything, Andy, it was more of a rerun of the first fight. If anything, Luke won a bit more conclusively this time.
Probably more emphatic this time. And what struck me was that he didn't have to do a whole lot to win. You know what I mean? I think Conrad, of course, his confidence was probably low, or he had a lot of doubts going into the fight, but he kind of got caught in between boxing and fighting and kind of having a bit of an identity crisis and kind of got caught in no man's land, and Luke just took complete advantage of that.
Mm.
And then it wasn't until the end he kind of had a go, and then it looked a bit better, but that's another great win and kind of stamps his authority as probably, I don't know, at that level of middleweights. But where does he go now? He wants to keep moving, keep forward.
He's talking
about Gabriel Rosado. That would be a huge fight for him. But yeah, really good performance by Luke Keeler. Sustained it 10 rounds and won clearly.
Yeah, I suppose in Conrad's mind he had to bring something new to the table because plan A didn't work the last day. And in the first round, I kind of anticipated this might happen, where he tried to stand off a bit more and try and box. And Luke was just sort of taking a look at him and just outboxing him at distance rather than up close. And then once it did revert to the usual formula, Luke was beating him up inside. It was just a comprehensive win.
It was interesting to see Carl Frampton's comments after as well. He writes for one of the Sunday papers, and he said, you know, Conrad's going to have a serious think about what he wants, because, you know, I don't know if I... Like Carl Frampton said, he's like, I don't know if I want to be watching him take that kind of punishment again.
It's true. He's still quite young in his career, and not sure. Like, he had huge expectations for himself, and coming out of the amateurs, he was a hard prospect because he was a really, really good amateur, Cummins. Like him and Quigley, they would have went back to back, and Michael O'Reilly, they would have been very much close together, you know. And he was very successful in the WSB as well, Cummins. And then obviously turning pro with McGuigan, he was kind of riding on Frampton's coattails, fighting on his own account, which he continued to do, but there was a time when his profile was progressing and everyone knew his name, but maybe he wasn't progressing as a boxer and kind of stalled a little bit. And he definitely hasn't fulfilled his potential.
Yeah, because Frampton even said, like, in the gym, he's unbelievable.
I've sparred him, and like, he'd give me a nightmare in spars. Like, he'd really put that out. Like, I was preparing for some big fights and had spars with him, and like, you're thinking, like, geez, what am I doing here? You know, because this kid's giving me, like, you know, hell, like, you know, and, but then, like, it just doesn't always produce that in the ring, you know. You'd see he's been, like, throughout his career, it's hard to see him having, like, one really big performance. He hasn't really had one big standout performance yet, and it's tough for him, because he's still a young man, and he's still very young in his pro career, but he's had two big losses now, and, like, on height, like, kind of against someone, not like he's lost to someone who's, like, at world level. He's lost to someone who's at his level, at domestic level, for now. So it's tough for him. Like, where does he go?
Well, he fought Derevianchenko in the World Series of Boxing in 2013. And he got whipped. Like, he lost 50-45 in all three cards. And Derevianchenko's, what, 5 or 6 in the middleweights at the moment. So you would have to go, what do you want to do next? And where do you see yourself going, seriously?
Yeah, but, like, that loss in the army, that can happen at any time, especially against Russia. It was probably in Russia, so you never, like, or Ukraine. And, the fact that he's competing with those guys, like, he was quite successful in WSB. He's had some good fights with Cuba and stuff like that, and competing at that level anyway is an achievement. But yeah, as a pro, he's just never like, all the dots were never, like, it just never connected all the dots or something, whatever it was. But he has to have a think about things, I guess. If he wants to, you know, like, it will take a huge amount of effort to come back emotionally, mentally, and then physically as well. You have to make some changes.
Yeah, I don't even know if psychologically maybe he needs a clean break from, like, stepping out of Frampton's shadow a little bit and maybe go out on his own just to see, try something different.
He's kind of done that in these last few fights. Like, he's not been on the Frampton cards, but
even in the camp, like, just a total separation. Yeah. Not that, like, they're clearly good friends, as if that's an issue. It's just more from a psychological point of view, just take himself away from that, be his own man. From Luke's point of view, there was an interesting moment in the opening couple of rounds where he was visibly hurting Conrad, and he didn't want to get Tom Doran again, so he went in to finish it, and he got caught with a snap left hook off the ropes. Yeah. And he was like, oh.
Conrad was always dangerous off the ropes. Even when Luke was piling under pressure, he'd always, like, throw the odd good left hook to keep Luke honest, you know? But Luke really showed his class. He was dominant there, and, like, inside, outside, feints from the outside, and you'd have to say he's probably one of the most improved boxers in Ireland in
a
long time.
It's the full-time training, though, isn't it? He's with Pete Taylor, which, I mean, that's a story in itself, that Pete was at the fight. Like, obviously, he had a health issue last week. I know Luke Keeler's brother was in the corner, kind of, he was shouting a lot of the instructions, because I'm not sure that doctors would even advise that Pete should have been at the fight, like, but... you could see they were quite emotional in the ring after them.
Yeah, no, it was a great win for him, and some, like, really puts that to rest, the whole thing with him and Cummins now, because before the first fight it was a real toss up, wasn't it? You weren't sure which way it would go, and then Luke dominated, but he did even more this time around. So
He's got a really rounded style, as you said, and, like, even going back to the prize fighter days and the return of the Mac Bill in Dublin, Eddie Hearn loved him, like, from the start. He earmarked him, I want this guy, he's charismatic, good-looking chap, fights well. And it's just never really happened for him, the Tom Doran thing took...
Great to see him get a big fight, wouldn't it? You know, see what he can really do.
Well, he said when he was in here, he was offered Rosado for that Philly card, so hopefully that comes back around again, or someone on that level, because, like, obviously it's a close fight, but it's a winnable fight given the styles, and... Like, that would really catapult him up the rankings, wouldn't it?
He's a fresh guy. Like, I know he's probably not the youngest Luke Keeler.
He's 31, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's fresher. Something like in his career, he seems, and especially with training full time now, he kind of seems reinvigorated. So, look forward to seeing him and get what he does next, and if they can deliver for him, you know.
And hasn't taken much punishment. Like, those are his only two losses. One was a prize fighter split decision. One was an up and down fight, sort of over in a couple of rounds. So, he seems like he could really put something together in the next 18 months, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I just had a quick look kind of the level now he might look at. Murata hasn't fought since the Brandt loss. Hassam and Downs coming off the Martin Murray win. Lemieux hasn't fought since O'Sullivan. And Derevianchenko and Jack Kulke are fighting on the 13th of April. So possibly the loser of that fight.
He said when he was in here he would like a bit of Jason Quigley. They fought in the amateurs. Would you like to see that one?
I would love to see that fight, like, and that would be a great fight for both lads.
Where'd you put it on?
Where'd you put it on?
Finn Park.
Up in Donegal, yeah. It'd be great, wouldn't it, to see them two lads fight, even if it had to be in England, you know, on a matchroom show, or in New York or Boston or something like that. A great fight for both lads. You would love to see it. Me and Jason were in the commentary on Saturday night. We're really impressed with him. I really, really like the comments he made and the insight he gave, and very smooth, very polished. Yeah, he really is an impressive young man. Smartly dressed as well.
It's going to be the next Max Kellerman when he wraps up as well, going in doing the interviews in the ring.
Yeah. He didn't know, like, there was some confusion with TG Carr. He didn't really have a floor manager, so we didn't really know when we were on air. That's the phone thing. Like, when we saw ourselves on the monitor, that's when we knew we were on air. So
I like the way you're looking at it.
He didn't know when he had to go into the ring to do interviews or when he was. So he was just basically like sitting there, like, what's going on? Am I in the ring or am I out of the ring? And it was pretty funny, you know. We had a good night.
Yeah, and it was a good weekend for Irish boxing all around. Aaron McKenna got a win as well, maintained his unbeaten start to his pro career. First time he's gone the distance. So,
yeah.
Have you seen much of Aaron?
No, little bits and pieces. Yeah, you see, like, he's tall and lean, but he punches to the body well, and he seems to have a good crowd-pleasing style. It's very early yet for him, but yeah, the signs look good.
He was in here just before Christmas chatting to Owen, I think, and just they were running through some of the pictures he's had, like Lomachenko and all these different...
Kendrick Lamar, he's a big fan.
Yeah.
Some experience for someone that young, isn't it?
Yeah, class. I mean, if you're sampling this, like, it's maybe a little indication of what could be to come down the road, but, you know, don't look ahead too far. Like, just keep the head down and get more wins on the record and the rest will follow.
And some of the money going around America, Andy, you must be considering a comeback. you see Craig O'Brien's gone out now under the Murphy's Boxing banner, and he got a win over the weekend, so he's trying to get on board there.
Boxing is probably, it's obviously in a transition because of the streaming that's coming into it, but there's huge money flying around. I know there's been all these rumours about Klitschko coming back and signing a huge deal with DAZN, and
I wasn't sure if that was an April Fool's or not.
I don't know, yeah, but like, even before that, though, over the last while, and there's just so much money involved.
Do you remember that list you sent around after your final fight of, you know, fighters you'd fight and the prices? Do you have to revise that now, do you?
I don't know.
Move the decimal point over one.
Yeah. But it's great for boxing, it's great for the fighters, and like, the opportunities are there now for like a guy who's, like Luke Healy, he's had some good wins, but now he could go out, like, the opportunity there, because there's so many fight cards, and on any given weekend there's two or three fight cards, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's only so many boxers at a certain level, and they can only fight so often, and then once they lose, they're going to have to be, you know, somebody else is going to have to fill their void, so there are opportunities. You look like the likes of Tommy Coyle is likely to get a world championship fight, and Luke Healy could fight Gabriel Zada, then beat him, then go on, and by the end of the year he's fighting for a title. So there are opportunities there that were never there, like when I was fighting, especially early days. So yeah, it's great for boxers.
I saw Stephen Ormond calling out Tommy Coyle for that fight in Madison. That would be a rip roaring fight. I think the word is Chris Algieri possibly for Coyle, which seems like a bad style for Tommy, but it's a huge show for him, Madison Square Garden. Having lost to Luke Campbell that time, he probably never thought he'd get back to this sort of level, so it's great for him.
Especially when he pulled down Eddie Hearn's shorts as well. Yeah. It's probably not the best thing to do for your promoter, but he's just such a likeable chap though, isn't he?
Yeah,
I think he tweeted there recently about, I don't know how I still have a job after this, whilst posting the video again.
Just last couple of points on the Irish side of things. Kenny Ockenbo, Andy, we were talking about this the other day.
Yeah, it's strange. I've only read the details. I haven't read the exact details. I've only read the outside of it. But they've given it to him now. They've given him the Irish title.
Mm. So
strange.
They flipped the decision. There was confusion reigned on the night, Simon. I'm sure you remember that. The referee stopped the fight due to a clash of heads, and ultimately gave the decision to Tony Brown. But now it's been flipped back. And Ken's got and he's probably, after so many times getting to that stage, he's finally gotten it. So, on one sense, you feel you're happy for him, but then it's a
shame.
Not
the way he would have wanted it.
No.
They could maybe just had a rematch or something, like a box off of some sort to decide the winner.
If I remember that fight correctly, I thought the guy who was just given the title won it on the night. And then there was a whole thing, and now it's back and forth. Like, the moment's been taken away. Mm. It's like when you see
the referee ruined that fight.
Yeah.
And I still thought Tony Brown was winning anyway, so I thought, oh, well, at least he's got the right winner at the end.
Is he?
But he did. There was announced referee stop contest, so that means that Kenny won the fight. So, and then they announced Tony Brown was the winner. So it was just.
And Tony was distraught. He thought, So even he thought. So it's just appeal versus appeal, counter appeal. So it's a messy conclusion to what was a really messy fight anyway.
Mm. Yeah. None the wiser, basically.
And then the last bit of Irish news, the Cork Cuban Mike Perez got a big fight there.
See that, yeah.
London Makubu, who famous for getting knocked out by Tony Bellew for the WBC title. But it's still a high-profile fight, and if he wins that, it launches him into the cruiserweight stakes.
And Mike is such a talented guy, but it seems like every time he fights, he's fighting one of the best guys in the world. Like, it's... You can't, like, give the guy a break. Like, I know he wants to beat these guys, but, like, being Makubu, he beats him, but it doesn't do anything for, like, it just kind of put him up there, but, like, it's not like he's winning the title for it, so, like, he's going to have to, like, go for a really, really hard fight and not have the payoff of a title afterwards. So, like, you'd like to see him get a break where one of the champions thinks, I'm going to take this guy as an opponent, and then Mike surprises him, because he's been so unfortunate in his career and all the fights that he's had. You think of, like, Brian Jennings, and then the fight out in Latvia or Lithuania against Bredis. Like, it's mad, isn't it?
In retrospect, looking back at that cruiserweight tournament, like, he did what, just to be in that 8-man tournament was an unbelievable achievement, because it's one of the most high quality tournaments ever put together in boxing, probably. And they're obviously in the middle of season 2 of that with the cruiserweights, and Usyk has vacated one of his titles, and I think he's going to test the waters up at heavyweight just to make sure everything's...
Is that fight set yet?
No, I think the date is set. It's the middle of May, but it's not the opponent, not quite yet.
It's not Pavetka, no?
It's not.
Not guaranteed, no.
Okay. It's down. Yeah.
So Mike, hopefully he can get the win there. We'll move on to events in Liverpool. We'll get our teeth stuck into this one, Phil. Get our teeth stuck into
David Price
against Cash Ali. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Cash Ali talked a good game into the fight, and then as soon as the fight came along, didn't really back it up. You know, you're looking at the way it ends. Is this just a case of Cash Ali realising, I'm having a chance here, I'm going to get disqualified so I don't get knocked out?
Insane, isn't it?
Mm.
Crazy.
It seemed like Pricey was tiring a little bit, so it wasn't as if it...
It was mad. It was just one of the weirdest fights I've ever seen. Neither of them were convincing, but Ali was swinging hard shots that could have, like had he just, I don't know, could have hung in there, even though Dave Price probably winning the fight, controlling it a little bit.
Yeah.
But there was always chances for Ali. Then he does that, and I think he'd done it 4 times with the referee, and he caught him twice. Insane. A coward. No place for him boxing.
What do you do with him then? Like, he obviously probably gets a fine,
Probably gets banned and gets relegated, never fights on a big show again, because he's...
Or is it the flip thing where everyone knows who he is now, so let's throw him in with Tom Little or something?
Yeah, maybe. An easy fight for somebody, but... Like, for David Price, you'd wonder what he was just saying after the fights, his comments were like, you know, a win is a win and I'll take any win I can get, but...
It's like I was saying last week, what is he going to do? Like, and one of the first people to congratulate him, Niall Kennedy.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight.
That'd be a good fight, yeah. And that'd be an interesting one for us.
If Niall was to win that,
that's a huge name for him, yeah. You'd wonder where does he go, what's he fighting for? Now, he's talking about the winner of David Allen and Lucas Brown. Now, there's something in that, but...
Chris Arriola's out there as well. Could be an interesting fight.
He called out Klitschko. He said, if Klitschko wants an easy first fight back, you know, David Price is a good thing.
He tried to emulate himself on Klitschko. You know, Vladimir was kind of his hero, I'd say, early in his career. You see, he went to red and gold and all stuff like that. But he has the size and probably has his right hand, same as Vladimir. He doesn't have any of the attributes in it. And it's very hard to see what, like, Vladimir, when Emmanuel took over with Vladimir, Vladimir worked on Vladimir's footwork like every day for at least, I don't know, Vladimir would do 45 minutes straight in the ring, just moving with music on, and just moving, and even dancing, working on his footwork. And Vladimir had developed and built up his left hand so much that he could be able to control you with his left hand, that to get to Vladimir, in order to hit him, like the punches that Cash Ali was landing on David Price, those kind of overhand winging shots, to get to Vladimir those, you had to get past this left hand, because that was like, it was just like a barrier.
Yeah.
It was so strong, and he would control you, because he has a size of hand, he'd move your head that way, and of course your balance, he'd just put your whole weight and balance over that side, he'd move you that way, and it was exhausting to be in the ring against Vladimir. And that's the difference of, like, David Price's legs are so bad, you know, and he doesn't have any, his defense is just, typical amateur stuff where you get, if you get up close to him, he'll do that, or he'll pull back like that. And he's always going to be susceptible to getting hit with a big shot, like.
Yeah. Kevin Caban was talking earlier in the week, he was at the Tony Thompson one fight when David Price was the next big thing, and Tony Thompson just came over and took the air out of the balloon that day. And it did bring about one of the greatest interviews ever in the second fight, but we won't get into the specifics of that. Just on Klitschko, though, Andy, I know David Price has had a weird sort of run there with Tom Little and Cusman, and there's three fights in a row where nothing really happened and he didn't conclusively win or lose. But that Klitschko fight might be on the table. But from Klitschko's point of view, I know someone you would have been friendly enough with over the years. Do you want to see him coming back?
No, I don't think so. What's he going to do? Like, he's in great shape. He still keeps himself in shape. But coming back, you're only going to... He obviously doesn't need the money. Probably misses the limelight and sees that these three guys, Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua, who do would have sparred a lot with Joshua, and Tyson Fury, guys he probably believes he can beat and dominate, are getting huge fights. Mm. But yeah, I wouldn't like to see him coming back, because his legacy now, I know he's probably feels like he's such a perfectionist, he's such a competitive person, that he's lost to Fury and then he comes back and then he loses to Joshua in what was a fight in which he gained a lot of not credibility, but he kind of went out on a high even though he lost. But he probably feels personally that he is some business left undone there.
He's got a really strong hand in the heavyweight picture at the moment, because he's a huge name, and we've got these three different leagues. It's something we've spoken about over the weeks, where you've got Showtime, DAZN, and ESPN, and he's a matchable opponent for each of the three guys. And like, DAZN are obviously throwing the biggest pitch forward, and they're offering to fund his academy and fund his foundation and all this kind of stuff. So from that point of view, from a financial point of view, it makes sense.
Yeah.
From a legacy point of view, he doesn't need it. And from a health point of view, you just don't want to see him getting in with...
No, well, like, if he's fought the other two, is he going to fight Wilder?
Wilder would probably be the... You would say, looking at them, would be the one he would... I would think, style-wise, would do the best just against.
The jab.
Because Fury's always going to be awkward, and he's already been there with Joshua. Although he had Joshua gone and rocking, and but see, couldn't like, finish his job. But
a few years ago, before... Like, if that was a better Vladimir, he probably finishes Joshua.
If Emmanuel had been in the corner, if Emmanuel was around, yeah, because Emmanuel wouldn't let him like take his foot off the gas.
Yeah.
But look,
I don't think
it's very interesting. Interesting, yeah. Isn't it? You know, in a sense, if he does or if he doesn't.
I don't think the heavyweight division needs him now. I wouldn't like to see him get.
In a sense, it needs him, because these three guys are never going to fight in the near future, and there's a lack of fights out there for them. Big marquee names. And that's where he comes into it, in terms of his value.
He does, but he never really took off in America as a pay-per-view seller or as a crowd pleaser. And I'm not saying he based himself in Europe and in Germany the whole time. So I'm not sure how much the American market might take to him.
Do you do a 24/7, like kind of a all access, to build it up well? I think people still know who he is, even though his fights weren't always like
barn burners.
Blockbuster fights, but. I don't know.
It's one of those, if he sees a weakness, when George Foreman came back and spotted a champion he thought he could beat, he came back. So maybe Klitschko, he's in such phenomenal shape that he probably has another couple of years to sort of weigh it up, and if he spots a gap, he might attack it.
If he had fallen out with the brother, and then they were to fight each other.
That's a fight I would have watched.
So just back to the Liverpool card, fight of the night. Unquestionably, it was billed as such beforehand. The odds makers didn't necessarily agree. Anthony Fowler was a huge favourite, but it was Fitzgerald that came through and won quite conclusively, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was just had a little bit more throughout the rounds. And both men fought for, like, both young men, but they fought very well. Like, they fought very well. It was a good contest, and, like, you know, at this stage in their careers, to take for both of them. And but Fitzgerald just had a little bit more. I don't know. You wouldn't, like, from the outside, you wouldn't think it, but throughout the fight, his punches were a little bit sharper, a bit more polished, a bit better technique. And he looked more like a natural boxer in there, like a natural fighter. Like, he looked like he was more comfortable at what was going on and how it was going, and a nice bit of snap and spite in his punches too. But it'll be an interesting, like, this could end up being like Groves and De Gael.
Yeah, that's type actually of what fight. I was thinking. I thought Fowler, I actually had Fowler maybe a round up going into the last round. I thought he definitely won the first three rounds. Then the ninth round obviously was his round where he nearly got the job done. Ultimately it cost him because he had nothing left then in the tenth. But those middle rounds, some of them were close enough.
Yeah, I just like the work of Fitzgerald. I just thought his punches
were... the fact that he's not the most likeable fact, or chap, Fowler, sometimes are we guilty of watching a fight through the eyes of someone that wants him to lose?
Yeah, I don't fool CJ Ross on it.
I actually don't mind him. Like, I like him. I don't...
Oh yeah, like the general perception out there, there was a lot of people were happy to see him lose.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Kind of. Well, he puts himself up for that because of his social media presence and the things he says and comes out with. And he plays... It doesn't necessarily play the villain role, but he kind of... He's not sympathetic, is he? You know, you kind of don't feel much for him. But... Like, it's a huge, it's a huge loss on a huge platform, but hopefully he will learn from it. But it's hard to see where he improves and what he does, because, as I said, he's not really a doesn't really look like a natural boxer. He reminds me a little bit of Froch in the sense that he's uncoordinated and tough and hard. But the style that he's kind of adapted to has gone pro, what they call it, is where he kind of, for a tall man, he fights in the crowd and he moves his head, but it's very predictable. It's very like, it's not pedestrian, we're just plodding along. It's kind of, but he has explosive hands or punches, but not great footwork or head movement. So, I don't know, it's just like, he trains very hard, he's in great shape, but like to change fitness and...
That was the first time you went beyond six.
To change technique takes a long, long time. To change style takes an investment of maybe six fights and 2 years or 3 years, you know, so... That's a long way, and that's a long time for a guy who's 28 to maybe do that, you know?
And Groves De Gael, you brought it up there, Andy. People would have been surprised at the time if you told them those two are never going to box again, but it seems almost certain that this is going to be sort of a round robin with probably Ted Cheeseman thrown in. They're all going to fight each other in the next 2 years. Simon, would you have any qualms about throwing young fighters in against one another like this? And there surely isn't much harm in taking a loss at this stage in your career, because he's probably learned more from that defeat than any of his wins to date.
I don't have a problem with it. No, I just it and like we have a problem in boxing at times where you're building padding people's records just to get them up to 9, 8, 9, 10 and 0 to sell them on cards. So I've no problems with competitive fights early on. No.
Matthew Macklin made the point, Andy, and it's something we spoke to you about moving down. He's a 154 fighter. And Matt said when he moved down himself, he felt his punch resistance was weaker and he couldn't move as well. Fowler has dragged himself like a good bit down from his natural weight. Do you think that's a factor?
I don't know. I just think, just go back to to the question you asked. I think you put your young, from a manager's point of view, someone who's looking at your career, you put your young fighter in a fight like that where... From the outside, it's 50-50, you both want the people, but you know that your guy's going to win. You know, that kind of way that you can kind of see how your style will beat him. And then, because the Fowler now, the whole story about him and the narrative around him for the next while is obviously he's lost that huge rivalry fight. It's not just like a fight where it's like a defining fight. And for the next two or three fights, he's going to be trying to rehabilitate him. And the story will always be referenced he's always going to be reminded of that Fitzgerald fight until he beats it or goes beyond that, similar to Groves and De Gael. So
they ultimately went their separate ways. Do you think Fowler is best served maybe trying to right that wrong in his own mind or go his own journey?
The thing is, with the two lads going their separate ways, you could see that like with De Gael and Groves, that they had the potential to at that fight, but would go on to become world champions. That they were, so the fact that they went that way and became world champions, they didn't need each other because they were already validated in what they had done as champions. Fowler and Fitzgerald, I'm not sure if they can beat world champions. Mm. Like,
Fitzgerald's a really interesting one because he said himself, the phrase he used was, "I was playing boxing to this point."
Yeah.
This almost flicked a switch in his mind. He just doesn't like Anthony Fowler, and it focused him so much that he was in brilliant condition, got the tactics spot on, and you know that 10th round was phenomenal, the shot that put Fowler down. So to produce something like that in round 10 of what was a grueling fight, high tempo, just showed how much he wanted it.
Yeah, so like these guys can go on to higher things. Like they probably would beat a lot of guys who are deemed a level above them. But for me, I think Fowler wouldn't need the rematch. I think he will need the rematch and to right that wrong because of the personal issues that's involved with the whole thing and how far it went and that side of things. What do you think? Like,
yeah, I mean, you often find in domestic fights, it's like rematch straight away. You think of the Hany Rabai fight just at the weekend there. I think Fowler needs another fight to get the win back and then maybe come looking for him again. Mm-hmm. And it could be a rivalry that goes two or three times into the future.
See, those wins, like, I do agree with you on the Hany win, coming back and having a win, getting a win, and then maybe pushing him for a rematch because he's been out of the ring for so long, and it would be great for him to have another camp and then have another fight and all that experience or whatever. But for Fowler, if he comes back and beats a guy who he's expected to beat, does that do anything to diminish his loss already? No, he's still feeling the hurt from the loss, and he hasn't really gotten any confidence from the win.
But Fitzgerald's career is not, you know. He doesn't wait,
but it seems like already now that he's going to fight Cheeseman.
Yeah, but if Fitzgerald goes on and maybe gets some sort of a belt, maybe then Fowler can go back at him. But I see your point where,
like, until he writes that wrong or fights somebody at the same stature and level, then he's not going to have any confidence or any belief, like, you know, that he's erased that loss.
Mm. And elsewhere on the card, Natasha Jonas came back trying to get herself back in the sweepstakes, in the Katie Taylor sweepstakes, as it were. The Fitzgerald Fowler was kind of the boxing fans' main event, but the last fight on the card was obviously Liam Smith against Sam Eggington, and levels in boxing is something that comes up every week, and it was just like a world-level fighter against someone not quite there.
And I know, we'll go back to your favourite fighter, Lewis Richardson, a guy who's given away his biggest advantage by moving up in weight, because like he was so strong at welterweight, Eggington, so big. And that was his biggest advantage. And now that he's gone up to like middleweight, he's just a regular fighter. And seemed like a real like lack of snap in any of his punches from round two.
No, it was that was uncomfortable to watch. You know, he took a real beat.
And Liam Smith wasn't even at his best, and he went through him like.
Mm. Oh, like they'd sparred 100 rounds together previously. Mm. So, and there was no game plan. If Eggington knew that Smith was better than him, you want to see some sort of, you know, we'll just jab for the first three or four rounds and just keep him behind the jab. But it was not. It seemed like two hard guys going at each other, and you know, Smith was just levels above, and it did get very uncomfortable to watch. Again, you're kind of looking at round four, it was like you can throw in the towel now, there's no need for this.
Yeah, how good is Liam Smith? Because it was often referred to in the commentary, he's world level. Now he's fought at world level.
Mm. Well, he was world champion for a period of time, you know, so
he's only lost at the real top end.
Yeah.
So, but that, when you look at that top end, there is really elite, isn't it? You know, when you look at those, the one Charlo, Tony Harrison, the Alessandro Lara, Jared Hurd, those like middleweights, like the...
Wouldn't Kell Brook be a good fight for him?
Kell Brook would be a great fight. I think that was probably one of the carrot dangling on the stick for signing with Matchroom, saying like, come on over, and that'll be the fight with Kell Brook.
Yeah, because short of Amir Khan, which I think we can agree that's not happening, you know, it's a pay-per-view, potentially a fight if they could build two former world champions, grudge match, both in the same part of the country, so that could be a way we're going to do it. That's pretty much it for today, lads.
It's a wrap.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for everybody for tuning in as well. We'll be back next week with build-up to Anthony Crolla against Vasily Lomachenko, and we'll preview Dennis Hogan's big shot at the world title. Until then, it's bye from us.